North, South, Central America, and around the world, you're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Carolyn Nelson.
And I'm Carolyn Nelson.
Folks, once you get out your pad of paper and your pen, we are going to scoop the world tonight. The only other place that this story has been heard is within a small group in the country of Canada, and one broadcast interview in New York City. So get ready to have your minds blown one more time as you listen once again to the only bastion left in the world of free speech, integrity, and of course, republicanism, what this country was based upon, the hour of the time. On the phone lines, ladies and gentlemen, we have Glenn Keeley, the co-chair of the Canadian Institute for Political Integrity, and Shelley Ann Clark. Welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Thank you. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Which one of you would like to start with this story?
Well, I guess I can introduce Shelley Ann. Shelley Ann is one of approximately a dozen whistleblowers that have come to our institute in Ottawa following my own disclosures. In 1991, I brought evidence to a courtroom in Ottawa which saw charges laid against 16 people, the three top Mounties, the three top Royal Canadian Mounted Police in Canada, were charged with ceasing and limiting investigations, covering up political corruption. And then 13 Tories, 13 members of the Conservative Party, including the Speaker of the Senate, two other senators, a former provincial premier, were accused of fraud upon the government, collecting bribes and kickbacks from government contracting. A political twist was put into it after the charges were laid, and much like many of the investigations you've had in the U.S. in things like the Irangate and Contragate, we've seen this story now drag out for 3 years without being allowed to go before the courts. Recently, Shelley Ann Clark joined our group and brought information to us that in 1986, 87, and 88, she was an executive secretary to one of the highest-ranking negotiators in Ottawa, negotiating the free trade agreement with the U.S. Your ambassador, I believe, at the time was Mr. Murphy, and ours was Simon Reisman. And from her position at the Free Trade Office, Shelley Ann became a witness to the fact that there was a hidden agenda unknown to Canadians and unknown to Americans and controlled out of the financial powers of the world.
A hidden agenda, my. Well, who'd have thunk that would ever happen?
Well, it began... And I'll just run through the basic points, and then Shelley Ann can speak to the detail of it and answer any questions you may have.
Great. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I know what's going to come out of this interview. You don't. Make sure you take notes. And as usual, remember our admonition. Listen to everyone. Read everything. Believe nothing unless you can prove it in your own research. Remember, the deception is so deep in the world today. In order to bring about the one-world totalitarian socialist state, that we must all diligently search for the truth, and the truth is always elusive at best. We have begun our investigation into this story that you're going to hear during the remaining hour of the time, and we believe, so far, that it is true. Glenn, go ahead. Continue.
Okay, so it began when Shelley Ann identified the fact that the computer system, which had been brought in for the Trade Negotiation Office, had been compromised, and all secret files could be accessed by telephone, and some were being accessed, in fact. The second point was that the third-ranking negotiator, and not the public negotiator Simon Reisman, the third ranking man, Germain Denis, was the true and only boss. He was the only one who could approve any final positions, and he was in direct telephone contact almost on a daily basis with Brian Mulroney, who was the Prime Minister of Canada at the time, and we believe an agent of some foreign power.
You mean Mulroney might have really been Buffoney?
Yes. We were made aware from Shelley Ann's disclosures that there was in Germain Denis' safe an implementation scheme which gave dates and times where certain events had to take place, beginning with the separation of Quebec from Canada in 1995, and following through to the construction of what is known as the Grand Canal Project, which is a massive $200 billion water diversion project out of northern Canada.
In other words, that's really, from what we found out on our end, is to drain the Canadian lakes and bring that water to the United States.
That's right. It's to... They use the word recycle fresh water south to the U.S., of course, with no compensation for Canada, as we'll find out as we go along. This is strictly done for the benefit of the international bankers.
Sounds like the politics of Los Angeles.
Yes. Part of what Germain Denis had control over and was, in fact, giving away was control over Canada's energy, water, minerals, agriculture, and as well a program to harmonize our social programs, unemployment insurance and old age pensions and what have you,
and what would
those
be,
of the U.S.
What would be Canada's reward for this?
It, at one stage of the game, we would end up being bankrupt and without ability to repay our international debt. And at our request, the American government, and I make a distinction here between the government and the people of the U.S., because Americans are no more aware of this than most Canadians are, the American government would then come to our rescue and merge us into a 51st state of the United States.
And your debt would be forgiven or would be absorbed by the United States government. Folks, this is what we covered in our program almost 2 years ago on the World Conservation Bank. Natural resources in exchange for forgiveness of debt. Go ahead. You're right on target, and what you're saying confirms all of the research and previous programs that we've already done.
The main involvement that Shelley Ann Clark had in this was that she was responsible for preparing briefing books for the premiers, the equivalent to your governors. And although these premiers did not require, were not obliged to sign any agreement, it was made clear by the American government that unless the premiers were on board, we couldn't move towards an amalgamation, and the free trade deal would not never be accepted by Congress. So Shelley Ann was called at night to doctor a briefing book which would be used to brief the premiers, and the actual figures of what was really being given away were replaced by figures that would match those the premiers would find acceptable, and they were completely misled along the way. So without going into more detail at this stage, I can pass you over to Shelley Ann herself, and she can agree or disagree with my comments and answer any specific questions you may have.
Okay, Shelley, the world is waiting.
Well, I would like the world to know that I've been addressing all Canadians during the past 6 to 8 months, and that my message has been the following. The free trade agreement between Canada and the United States, and this is not to be confused with NAFTA, because NAFTA is the scheme that's implementing things that were already in the free trade agreement, was rigged. I know it was rigged because I'm the person that did it under instructions by my boss, Mr. Germain Denis. The reasons the free trade agreement was rigged was twofold. One, there was the hidden agenda, but the Prime Minister of Canada, Germain Denis, was put in place by our Prime Minister in order to mislead the premiers of this country into accepting the deal. Like Mr. Keeley said, even though in this country we did not need the signature of the premiers, they still had to have their acceptance of the deal because it would mean that they would have to make changes to their trade policies and procedures and rules that vary from province to province. And the United States would never accept us under the conditions if the provincial governments did not go along. Now, the story really begins in January 1987 when I was ordered for the first time. I was called at home at 11:30 at night to be brought into the Free Trade Office for 12 midnight. I was told by Germain Denis that I could not tell my husband nor anyone in my family where I was going at that hour of the night. When I met him at the Free Trade Office, he was waiting for me in the garage, and he had keys to bring us up to the Free Trade Office with the elevators by avoiding security at the front of the building. The Free Trade Office was located in a building that had high security, and anyone that left or entered that building after 6 p.m. at night would have to sign in their name and the time they arrived and the time that they left. So in order to avoid this, he had to make arrangements somehow to obtain a key to bring us up. Between 12 midnight and 4 a.m., I was told to create a duplicate file on the computer machine and to call it provincial. Once that file was created, I was ordered to alter the figures. If we were giving away 40% of our water supplies or any other issue, I was ordered to bring it down to 10%. At the end, the briefing books would always be given to the premiers at the very last second. Here in Ottawa and throughout the country, it was in the mainstream media for several months because the premiers were complaining severely to the Prime Minister's office and to the media that they never had a chance to look at these briefing books. It was just not possible because the briefing books would be numbered by me under instructions by Germain Denis so that I would know exactly which province had which book. So if one book did not come back, I would be able to track it down very easily. So you have 10 premiers meeting, and often Germain Denis would be meeting with two particular individual premiers in private dining rooms around the city here. And I believe that these must have been the two premiers that were the moles. They would obviously inform Germain Denis what the bottom line was that the other premiers were looking for.
Let me ask you a question, Shelley.
Yes.
Where did you learn that term mole?
Oh, that is a term that is very common here on Parliament Hill in Ottawa.
Okay. Here in this country, mole is generally known within the intelligence community as a plant within an organization who furnishes information to an operative handler. So that was...
information to Germain Denis.
Uh-huh.
They would speak to the other premiers, find out their bottom line, and report it back to Germain Denis, because each time we did the doctoring, we always... when I would pick up the 10 briefing books at the end of the briefings, 9 of them would be shredded, and 1 would be held back so that we knew exactly where he was at in the altering. Because if it had to appear genuine, he couldn't tell them once that he had gone to 10% and the next time be lower than that or so high that they would not believe the figure. So these two premiers, I believe, were in place giving him that information, because they always met about a day before we did the altering.
Uh-huh.
That's what has given me that impression. The chain of command here in Ottawa, the people out there have to understand that the chain of command here in Ottawa is that a prime minister only speaks with his ministers. And what struck me as very odd is when I was instructed that I could no longer take lunch breaks because I would have to wait for calls from the Prime Minister. And on 2 separate occasions, the linkage between his executive assistant and myself and Germain Denis would be cut off too quickly, and I landed up with the Prime Minister speaking to me on my line. So I know that the contact was made almost on a daily basis. And I also know that at the end, when in March 1988, a memorandum was sent around the Free Trade Office telling all the negotiators that all documents used in the negotiations were to be forwarded to a certain person in order to prepare the documents for cataloging to go to the National Archives of Canada. When this memo came around, I was called into Germain Denis' office, and I was ordered to sneak out all the documents that dealt with the provinces out to the trunk of his car throughout the period of 6 to 8 hours. I was told to bring them out at 1-hour intervals, 2-hour intervals if possible, because it would look less suspicious. And he, in fact, stole those documents, because these documents were classified, and it was when I was screening the documents that I had to sneak out in 7 Xerox boxes That's exactly what they totaled, were 7 Xerox boxes. That is when I discovered the implementation scheme. I will repeat what I have told all Canadians. My background is diplomatic corps and foreign service with high training in security. I knew that if I stole any document to prove what I'm saying, that I would be arrested promptly. Therefore, I did not steal the documents, but I took notes and I went by memory. The first disclosure I actually made was in July 1988, when I became so frightened with the knowledge that I had, when I saw that implementation scheme, which actually was two sheets of paper. One had a chart on it. It looked like a biorhythm chart. And the top cover page was a step-by-step explanation of how the implementation scheme would go and explaining the chart. And it showed that by the year 1995, Canada would have to be separated from, that Quebec had to be separated from Canada, and that by the year 2005, the completion of the Grand Canal project before the takeover was the exact wording used by the United States. On the explanation cover sheet, it said that in place was already one Lucien Bouchard that would be able to accomplish the deed for Quebecers in this country. And I, like I said, I reported this entire matter to my union, not knowing who to address and who to go to, and I wanted to do it in such a manner where I would be safe and have support. I made out a report. This report was brought to the Public Service Alliance of Canada. I met with them at 8 o'clock in the morning, and there were three other people with myself in the room, the number two of the Public Service Alliance and two service agents. When I showed them the report and gave them a verbal explanation, there was total panic in the room for approximately 20 minutes. When the panic finally settled down, the number two made the decision that, no, I won't bring this to the attention of the RCMP, but instead let our president, Mr. Darrell Bean, make that decision.
Now, by RCMP, you mean Royal Canadian Mounted Police?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
You have to remember, we're broadcasting all over the world, and some of our listeners won't understand some of these abbreviations, and I find myself making that mistake, too.
Yes. So the decision was made that this Darrell Bean, the president of the Public Service Alliance of Canada, would decide whether or not to take my information to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They kept my report, and I was told to go home and wait. Within 48 hours later, a courier service came and delivered an envelope to my home. When I opened up that envelope, it was a letter, and my report was attached to it. The covering letter, dated July 22, 1988, read, return of the document. It told me to destroy the document because if it fell into the wrong hands, it would be highly dangerous.
Meaning dangerous to who?
I'm assuming that it meant that it was dangerous for me.
Well, I'd say that was a pretty good assumption. It also
I would say that that was a very good assumption. And I therefore proceeded to have the document put away safely because something kept telling me that I should not get rid of this as they ordered.
Now, it's interesting to note here as well, Bill, that this same Darrell Bean, who's the president of a union who's supposedly independent of government and was preaching against free trade publicly, given the opportunity to expose exactly what had happened, instead of doing so, and he had that opportunity in 1988 before the actual free trade agreement was passed by Parliament, he ordered that the document be returned and asked Shelly-Ann that it be destroyed, and then proceeded to negotiate with the Prime Minister her removal from this country.
I was actually told that I would have to accept a posting being in the Foreign Service with a third world country. I was offered the number two position of an embassy in a small third world country. It took my union 1 year to get me out of that deal without my losing my position with the Foreign Service, and to get me into a Western world country, because at the end of 1 year, I agreed, since I wasn't getting support from nowhere, I agreed to at least leave the country and go to a Western world country. Upon my return to this country, I discovered that that Mulroney was still in place, and that threats began. It became, I joined several organizations here in Ottawa. I spoke to many people, and I made the decision to go to Canadians with all my information.
And how long were you out of the country?
I was out of the country between 1990 and December 1992.
Are you still with the Foreign Service, Shelley?
Yes, I was put, when I came back in 1992 and Mulroney was still in power, I was put on full paid leave at home. So I spent exactly from December 1992 to December 1993, I was on full paid leave at home, being told that there was no room for me at Foreign Service. There was no assignment. When our new government was elected in October of this year, because the Liberals are now in power.
Aren't they ever?
Yes. Now that they're in power, in December of this year, I was contacted and I was brought back in a high-profile position.
Now, you say you're still with the Foreign Service at this time. Did it ever occur to you to leave the Foreign Service? I'm not criticizing you. I was just curious.
Well, it's very... I'm a single mother with two children. And
jobs are scarce.
Jobs are very, very scarce. And I suppose that I made the decision, even back in 1988, if one wants to go back to that date, that I made the decision that I had to keep a job for the sake of my children. I think that if, and I know myself well enough, that if I had not had two children dependent on me, if I would have been a single person, I would have disclosed whether I had anyone's help or not. I would have proceeded to disclose.
Now, since you're doing this, why is it that they haven't let you go?
This is a very interesting question. And I don't, people are assuming answers. We're all taking guesses at why. one of them could possibly be because they would have, being a public servant, they would have to fire me with just cause. And since freedom of speech is supposed to exist in this country, although freedom of the press hasn't in the past, freedom of speech is still supposed to be with us. I'm allowed that freedom, and they're proving it by not firing me. Because if they fired me tomorrow for having spoken out on such an issue that is so of vital importance to this country, they would be saying that in Canada there is no longer any freedom of speech, and they would be firing me without just cause, which would create all kinds of problems for them.
We have a situation in Canada which is different from that of the U.S. When your administration changes in the U.S., all high-ranking government officers hand in their resignation to the new president and are usually replaced. In this country, we have a permanent government.
I hate to interrupt you, but we've got to take a break. So don't go away, folks. We'll be right back. Time is sponsored by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in the only commodity that has ever protected the wealth of any individual or, in fact, nations throughout the history of the world. I'm talking about precious metals in their various forms. We're headed for a big fall, folks, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this. If you've been listening to this program, you know how many times and how much I've admonished you to do something to protect what you've worked for all your life. All of what you've accumulated thus far is losing value daily. Don't ever, ever in your life think that by putting your money in a savings account and drawing 2 or 3% interest that you're going to save anything. By the time you reach the point where you need that money and draw it out, you have lost so much money that if you really understood this economy, you would hang your head and cry. Now, I don't care who you take the necessary steps with in order to accomplish this goal. But I would hope that because Swiss America Trading brings you the hour of the time, the only place where you can hear this kind of information, and the only place where we consistently scoop the world on the most important information, where we identify clearly the enemy, where we set out steps for you to take positive action, it seems to me that you would want to patronize the people who bring you this program. That's Swiss America Trading. I want you to call them right now. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Gene Miller was going to give the medal report tonight, but when we discovered we had the opportunity to do this broadcast, he wasn't able to do it. So he'll either be on tomorrow night or next Tuesday night, folks, or maybe next Wednesday night when I get back from San Jose. And by the way, I'll be in San Jose this weekend, March 18th, 19th, and 20th. I'll be the keynote speaker all three of those nights at the San Jose Convention Center, Civic Auditorium Halls A and B in San Jose, California, People's Republic of California, I should say. Number to call for information is 801-265-8828. That's 801-265-8828. Call now. Also, I've gotten together with some merchants, folks, some people who care about this country, people who care about you. They want to give you a break is what they want to do, and they're doing it. They've made up a catalog, and I've put some stuff in that catalog, and they've put some stuff in that catalog. And if you want a copy of this catalog, it's fantastic. It's called Surplus and Stuff. All kinds of survival gear and equipment. All kinds of preparedness supplies. Batteries, solar battery chargers, Alice packs. All the things that we've talked about on this program. Food storage supplies. It's going to be a thick catalog. If you'd like to have a copy, send $1 and a self-addressed stamped number 10 business size envelope. That's a self-addressed stamped number 10 business size envelope to Surplus and Stuff. Surplus and Stuff. Post Office Box 3300. That's P.O. Box 3300. St. John's, Arizona, 85936. Again, Surplus and Stuff. P.O. Box 3300. St. John's, Arizona, 85936. And I'll repeat it one more time for you slowpokes. Surplus and Stuff, P.O. Box 3300, St. John's, Arizona, 85936. Send for your catalog. I know that you're really going to like it, folks.
God, what is it?
Socialism. As we enter the millennium, welcome back to the Hour of the Time. Shelley, would you like to continue?
Yes. Why don't we continue by you asking a question that you feel is of utmost importance throughout everything that's been said here?
Well, what has been the response to what you revealed by the Canadian people?
The Canadian people, especially where I have just get spoken in February and March throughout Western Canada, have been absolutely horrific. Steering committees have been created on the spot in the meeting rooms where I was get speaking. in order to deal with this issue. I've been appealing to all of them that the only way that something can be done about it, there are two things that happen here. Because the documents are illicit, that means that they could not, it cannot be implemented if they can discover where those documents have gone to. Canadians want to know where they are, and they want to view them.
What's been the response of the government?
There has been no response from the government.
You mean they haven't?
So far, everyone is being very quiet and silenced.
I can tell you that one Reform Party member, who's supposed to be a member of the opposition, went directly to the Minister of International Trade and broached the subject with him. The minister is Roy McLaren, and I quote his response. "I don't want to hear. It's old news. It's water under the bridge."
No pun intended, of course.
Yeah, no pun intended. We're basically dealing with a situation which is very similar to the U.S. situation, when you have a president leading a Republican Party who happens to be out of favor with the population because of his ideas.
Out of favor is not the word for it. Americans are arming themselves.
And you heave him out, and you replace him with a Democrat who's supposed to be an opposition voice, and that person then comes in and implements exactly the same program. We have a similar project in Canada, a similar activity. We have liberals and conservatives, and they are basically two halves of the same team.
That's right.
The only people they respond to are the bankers, Rothschild and Rockefeller.
Well, it goes a little deeper than that, as we revealed on this program, but you're basically on the right track. You understand, of course, that in the documents you saw, Shelley, when it refers to the United States, they really mean the United Nations.
Yes.
Are you there, Shelley?
Yes, I'm there, and I had not understood that, I have to admit, that when I read it, to my understanding, it was to the U.S., because...
Well, that's what they have
on the American side. I have now been given some documents have come forward that have been sent to me showing studies that have been made in the U.S. and the water diversion scheme that is being planned, and it certainly confirms, what I saw in the documents.
Yes, but what I'm trying to
give to fit in the United Nations.
You have to understand, of course, that the United Nations was created by the United States.
Well, yes, I realize that.
The United States military forces are the world police force. The United Nations headquarters is in New York.
The world police force, that I knew. I just never connected it to what was going on and what I was reading in the implementation scheme.
We look upon the United Nations Security Council as being the world's bailiff.
Actually, it's an illegal group of socialists who have no standing whatsoever. They are not a nation, and somehow they're gaining control of the world. And those of us in the United States who are becoming awake to this and understanding it are setting out to stop this. There is no Bill of Rights in the United Nations Charter. In fact, if you read the United Nations Charter and the UN resolutions, there are no individual guarantee of rights for anyone. And what we now know as rights become privileges, which of course can be granted or taken away by the state at will. And they can't use the terms UN in treaties and agreements like you're discussing simply because it would give it away to the common sheeple, so to speak. And they want the sheeple to stay sheeple and asleep as long as they possibly can until they have enough force and enough consensus through organizations or movements like the New Age movement and all of these socialist organizations and these scams like global warming and the ozone hoax, etc., 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 in order to totally bring down the borders of sovereign nations and consolidate their world totalitarian socialist government. And that's really where all this is leading. That's what these trade agreements are all about. It's a breakdown of borders, and of course, when borders come down, sovereignty ceases to exist. That's the purpose of the EEC. That's the purpose of NAFTA. That's the purpose of GATT, which, by the way, was created way back in the early 40s.
Perchance, I must add that since you mentioned GATT, that the same gentleman, Germain Denis, that did the misdeeds on the free trade agreement is the person in charge of the, or was the person in charge of the GATT negotiations for Canada. It's just now wrapping up.
Uh-huh.
We have a different situation in Canada than the American one. We do not have the types of checks and balances that you have, even
we don't have them either. It may appear to you as we do, but we really don't.
We are basically a dictatorship. They control the media. They rig the nominations of the main political parties. They then run candidates who have the same platform, even though they claim to be different before the election. And once someone is elected in Canada, their power is given up to the leader of the party. The prime minister in Canada is, in fact, a dictator of Canada for a 4 or 5 year period. He appoints all the judges, he appoints prosecutors, he appoints the commissioners of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and therefore the entire structure of government is controlled through the appointments given by the prime minister. He also has the authority to pass changes to any law or regulations through orders in council, which are basically just...
down here we call them executive orders.
Executive orders.
Our NSC memos, or things like that. They're all the same. We're all moving in the same direction. We're all becoming the same, socialist, totalitarian. We all cut our ties in the old world, left the king behind, and came here to escape religious persecution and found nations under which we could live in freedom. And isn't it funny how the king is coming back? And we who were sovereign kings in our own right are once again becoming subjects owned by something or someone else.
Well, certainly the king had a staff of knights in the old days to protect his interests. And those knights developed into the professional societies we know of today, the bankers and the lawyers and the accountants and those types. And it's rather than the king taking over, I think the knights, especially the banking fraternity, has turned the tide on both the king and the servants and is taking control.
Yep. You're absolutely 100% right. Well, folks, do you have a phone number and an address where people can reach you? I know there's a lot of people out there listening who are going to want more information. They may want you to come and speak. They just may want to call and talk or lend you support. How can they get in touch with you?
Our name is the Canadian Institute for Political Integrity. The address is Post Office Box 1634, Station V, as in Bob, Hull, H-U-L-L, Quebec, Q-U-E-B-E-C, Canada, and our postal code or zip is J as in John 8X3X5.
Yeah, I'd like you to repeat it one more time. And folks, if you don't catch it, you can call the research center, and Carolyn has the information here for you.
Canadian Institute for Political Integrity, CIPI for short, Post Office Box 1634, Station B, Hull, Quebec, J8X3X5. Our telephone number is area code 819-778-1705. That's area code 819 877-778-1705. Now, I have one caveat to add here because we just gave out our address to Western Canada a month ago, and we were flooded with requests for information.
Good.
We are a small group, about 1,000 members from coast to coast in Canada. We don't have any funds at all. So if people want information from us, then they should consider sending a $20 bill or something to help us out.
Well, whether it's a $20 bill or whatever, folks, send them a donation. They need some help. They're trying to accomplish the same goals that we are. Are there any things that you'd like to say in closing, Shelley?
Yes, I would like to appeal to anyone who is a Canadian listening in this evening to write to us or to write to people on Parliament Hill, whether it be just a member of Parliament or to one of the ministers, because the only way that these people are going to take action if they hear from 200,000 Canadians at least with severe pressure on them to do so. Because one portion that I forgot to mention as I was going through the information here this evening is that I went to do some research with a senior researcher that was provided to me by one of the organizations here in Ottawa in September. Because I wanted to see if any of the documents I was talking about had reached the archives. I was told that the free trade documents had been put away in sealed canisters and would not be viewed by Canadians for the next 30 years. And when we asked why, apparently approximately 95% of the documents have been declared a threat to Canada's national security.
I guess it is. If the people saw those documents, there wouldn't be any Canadian politicians in office anymore, would there?
Well, obviously, there might be more than what I have seen, and we are trying here in Ottawa and all across the country to put enough pressure on this government to have a public investigation into this matter and to have the seal canisters opened and to try and find out exactly what's in there that is a threat to our country. So I beg all of you to write to me, don't bother writing to the mainstream media here in Ottawa because it will... I've been totally blacked out. So that's why I'm requesting that you write to Parliament Hill or to the Institute, but to members of Parliament would be very, very effective because if they are put under sufficient pressure by enough Canadians, something can be done to perhaps save this situation.
Here's my advice, folks. Buy yourself a good weapon. Form your militia units. Get ready to fight for your freedom. And if you're not willing to fight for your freedom, you don't deserve it. They are so much in power now. Witness what happened in Idaho with the Weaver family. Witness Waco, Texas, the massacre at Waco, Texas. They were so concerned about the children, they killed them all. And the only solution to this, folks, is not through the political process. That will not happen. There is no promise of relief in the courts. If you want your freedoms, you're going to have to take your freedoms back. The law is with us. In this country, we are supported by the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States of America, the Bill of Rights, all of the unwritten laws and ethics for which men have fought and died for freedom in this country since its inception. Treason is rampant in the land. The traitors are known to all of us. Socialism sucks, and it's sucking right now all around the world. If you don't want to get sucked right into it, you better be able to stand up and be prepared to fight for your freedoms. I want to thank you both for being our guests on the Hour of the Time. We wish you luck, and I will encourage everyone listening to this program to write and send a donation, write for information, give these people the support that they deserve. And Shelley, you're to be commended for standing up and telling the truth when it could be so harmful to you and your family.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, Glenn, and I hope that your Canadian Institute for Political Integrity has some success, but I think we're way beyond that point.
Thank you very much. I hope you're wrong. We're going to fight it to the end.
Well, I hope I'm wrong, too. But everything that we touch points right into the corner that says I'm right. Good night, folks, and God bless you all. Thank you.